Roll for initiative. It's the ABXY cast. It's Tyler. Joining me this week, Chase.
Yes, sir.
No Ariel this week. She has the night off. Lucky, lucky, lucky.
Yeah, I know.
She doesn't really have the night off. She just couldn't get off of work in time, so.
Yes. She's working, sadly. She's making money doing it while we're not.
Yeah, no, I made money earlier today, so I'm good with that.
Well, I've been off all weekend. I've been relaxing.
Well, lucky. I was off yesterday, but I was sick. So that's not exactly the same.
That does suck.
Yeah, it was bad. It was real bad. Yeah. I apologize in advance to everyone if I sound like I'm recording from inside of a fishbowl. That's because I am. I am currently on my search. I'm creating a new documentary series for YouTube. It's about my search for a fish. It's called Finding Nemo. And it takes place entirely. What's that? They already have a movie? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. They do.
Ah, damn it. It's made by Disney? Okay. Well, podcast over.
Yep.
Okay. Well, working title, Finding Fishy.
Finding Fishy.
So if I sound different than normal, that's because I am currently recording on a Chromebook in an office that is not mine because I am babysitting a dog. So.
Babysitting a dog.
Yes. Dog sitting, if you will.
Yes. Yes.
But so that's why I sound different. Chase sounds the same as always because he's his normal setup. So.
Yes.
He'll sound good, and I'll sound like shit.
I mean, you don't sound that bad. You sound like Ariel every week. Ariel's been in the fishbowl.
Yeah, she. What's worse, though, is she's recording with a Yeti mic, and she still sounds like she's in a fishbowl because there's just so much echoing.
It's the location. She actually records at the dining room table.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I'm recording in a box.
In a fishbowl, you mean?
Yes, a fishbowl.
Yes.
A box-shaped fishbowl. A fish tank.
Fish tank.
There's Nemo. There's Dory. There's Marlin.
And there's me with my MacBook.
I wish. This is a Chromebook.
Fault.
This is a Chromebook that costs MacBook money, which is even stupider. But at least the microphone doesn't sound like total garbage. I probably would have been like, we ain't recording this week if I had one of those shitty ass Chromebooks.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would have stopped in my car and been like, I'm going to pick up my mic. Hold on.
I was about to say, you would have just not recorded the podcast.
No, I would have just gone and grabbed my microphone. I would have made time for it.
Absolute mood.
Yeah. Versus I was like, I don't really have time other than to delay recording the podcast by like 30 minutes. So I was like, fuck it. So I recorded a test sample. It sounded okay. So I was like, screw it. This is what we're going to do.
Hey, I mean, it's not horrible.
No. And speaking of not horrible, let's jump into the games this week because we both played the same game.
We did.
We did not play together, sadly.
No, we did not.
But we did play the same game, which is, of course, Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, which just missed. I really like this game.
I really enjoy this game.
Yes, I'm really enjoying it. It's everything I've always wanted out of a Borderlands game in many ways.
Agreed.
Every time I've played Borderlands, I've been like, you know what? Just give me some medieval trappings. Like, give me some fantasy here. Like, the sci-fi stuff is cool, but give me some fantasy for me to, like, rip into. And it's not perfect by any means, but it's the most fun I've had playing a cooperative video game since Borderlands 3.
Yeah, it's a good game.
Yeah,
it's a great game.
It is very good. So, I guess if you want to go ahead and kind of give people your thoughts,
give them my cup of tea,
your cup of tea, and then I'll give them my cup of tea, and we'll see where we meet.
All right. So we're keeping it no spoilers, just for all the viewers to know.
Yes.
I made a pros and cons list. I think the game I think this game is great. I haven't had, like you said, so much fun playing a Borderlands game since probably two.
Oh, no, since two.
I say two.
Okay.
This is up there for me. So I've been playing Borderlands since one, loved one, loved two, hated the pre-sequel, and I was worried this game was going to be kind of like the pre-sequel, mm-hmm. you know? Like they're trying something different, they're stepping out of their boundaries, and they step too far, and it's a horrible game. This game is the exact opposite. This game is beautiful. This game is awesome. This game is...
Mm. Well, it helps that it doesn't have that stupid oxygen mechanic.
Yes, that was a stupid oxygen mechanic. Fuck that mechanic.
So that helps. Helps a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree that this is the most fun I've had with a Borderlands game in a while. I think I was not someone that had a problem with Borderlands 3 as much as a lot of other people did. Yes, the story was absolute garbage, but I felt that it was so bad in a I have to see what they do next kind of way.
Yeah.
And the humor was a little, I would say, too on the nose in Borderlands 3.
Yeah.
Like it was almost like they didn't even try to be nuanced with it. It was just in your face.
Yeah.
Like dick joke after dick joke after dick joke. Yeah. Not saying Tiny Tina's Wonderlands is highbrow or anything. This is still the same Borderlands humor. But I feel it delivers it a bit more consistently and a bit less like obnoxiously.
Yeah.
And it helps that Tiny Tina, who I love as a character, but I will acknowledge is a very annoying character.
Hey, you stop that. You stop that.
I love Tiny Tina. I think she's great, but I will be one of the people that says, yes, I understand when people say she's annoying. Like, I get it. But she is nowhere near as bad as those influencers from 3.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree with you.
Yes.
But, no, one of my favorite aspects of the game is it really, with Tiny Tina narrating, I guess you could say, the story, it really feels like it brings out the D&D aspect. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
I love the way they do it. Like, not to spoil anything, of course. I'm just going to keep this very generic. But, for example, you could be fighting an enemy, and she'll be like, you know what? No. The enemy's stronger, and then we'll replace it with a stronger enemy, or be like, no, you've had a hard time, let me make it weaker. And I love that aspect where it feels like you are in a Borderlands D&D game.
Yeah.
Like they've done it perfectly.
Yeah, they have really captured the feeling of playing tabletop RPGs with friends.
Yes. Yes.
And there's definitely some references in there that are targeted exclusively at nerds. Like there's been a couple of like Lord of the Rings jokes that I was just like, oh, I got that. I think there's one specifically about Smeagol falling into the fires of Mount Doom at one point. Like there's a specific reference to that. but yeah, no, it's really good. So gameplay wise, it plays very similar. I would say yep. Shockingly similar to Borderlands 3. I did think going into it that there would be a little bit more, like, I don't know, fantasification?
Yeah.
That's not a word, but I just made it up. But I felt like there'd be a little bit more of that, and it feels yep. like outside of, like, swapping the grenades for the spells, which, great choice. And the introduction of the melee weapon slot, and like renaming shields to wards and then redesigning some weapons to kind of have a fantasy flair, it's still very much a gun game.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah.
So.
Oh yeah.
Which I fuck with. It's Borderlands. I want it to be a gun game. But I feel like they missed an opportunity to dial in a little bit into that. A little bit more into the kind of medieval like fantasy.
Kind of like bows?
Yeah, I'd say bows and arrows and swords and stuff. Like they could have dived into that, but I think if they had gone too far in that direction, it would have clashed too much with the guns. So I feel like they struck the right balance in the end.
Yeah.
But it would have been neat to see what they could have done with that kind of style.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. There's mini guns that are like crossbow guns, but yeah, they're kind of as pistols. And it's basically a fucking pistol, but exactly, it has the design of a crossbow. So it feels like it. Not really, but you know.
You still hold it like a pistol.
Yeah, you still hold the crossbow like a fucking pistol, and it still takes pistol ammo.
Yeah.
But it looks like a crossbow pistol.
Like there's, I love a point, it. There's a point in the game where just something's happening. I'm not going to like spoil the exact moment because, you know, it is what it is. But something's happening, and like there's this big like magical thing that's about to happen, and it turns out to just be a rocket. Like an actual, like a fucking bunch of missiles. Like that's what it turns out to be. And it's like, oh, but this is supposed to be magic, but it's missiles.
Well, it's Tiny Tina, you know?
Yeah. Literally with the magic explosives. Missiles. Literally, yes. Magic missiles.
Magic missiles.
But yeah, so what, like, what were some of your like pros and cons for the game, since you said you made a list?
Yes, I did. Pros, I love the boss fights. So it feels kind of like a Borderlands 2 boss fights. Mm-hmm. And I like the way Borderlands 2 did their boss fights, and it just feels like that. It's simple, it's easy. Some of them have, like back in the old Borderlands games, you'd have certain weak spots. Same thing with this game. Like the boss fights feel like a Borderlands game. It's awesome. Some more pros you've already covered with the grenades being replaced with spells. Mm-hmm. Those spells are OP.
Yeah, some of them are stupid.
Some of them are stupid OP. Like, I got a spell at level 9, and by the time I was level 24, I was still using that same level 9 spell, and it was still killing everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just because of the type of it was. I was like, yo, what? This spell is OP.
Mm-hmm.
But, overworld, absolutely amazing. I think it's when I was first loading up and I saw the overworld and how it's like a figurine type of thing, mm-hmm, on a board, I literally could not stop laughing for about 2 or 3 minutes because I was like, this is perfect. This is absolutely perfect.
Yes, it is. It is a super well designed overworld map.
Yes,
it is, you know, just and just the nature of it, it has that like highly artistic quality, like of someone who is gonna have like a really like highly constructed and painted figurines and all these things, but then, yeah, you just have random like cans of soda that are used to make rivers and bottle caps for bridges and the occasional Cheeto puff that you need to get rid of.
The Cheeto puff that's blocking the path.
The Cheeto puff that's blocking the path that you have to go do a quest to get it to move.
Yes.
And, you know, Tiny Tina, yes, eats it. Which
it's perfect. Like,
yes,
it really brings out character in the world, and I absolutely love it.
Yes, I agree. And I love that like there's an achievement for walking off of it. Like if you
really
walk, yeah, if you like walk off into the water.
Oh, yeah.
You, yeah, get an achievement for that, which I thought was nice because the first thing I did was try to go in the river.
I mean, who didn't? It's a Fanta river.
Yeah. I was like, oh, yes, let me go swim in the diabetes. I'm enjoying it a lot. Like you said, the boss fights, I like them. I think that the game does a good job about presenting, you know, these bigger bosses versus kind of smaller bosses. And, you know, so different quests are going to have different tiers.
Yeah.
I will say that in terms of like difficulty, none of the bosses have been
difficult,
like, challenge. I haven't died. I think let me rephrase it. I died one time, and that was when Matt went to go feed his baby and we were standing in one spot and I was on my phone. And then all of a sudden a bunch of dudes just respawned.
Well,
took us out.
Let me ask you, what difficulty are you on?
We are on intense.
Intense?
Yeah, the step up.
Okay, difficulty. So that, Is that medium or is that hard?
So, well, there's three game modes. There's like relaxed and then balanced, which is the default, and then intense, which is the step up.
Okay.
And that's what we're on.
Okay.
I don't know if there's higher ones.
Well, that brings me to my cons. All right. So I ran it on the hardest one too.
Okay.
And I died twice throughout the whole entire game.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the deaths was in the after game when I was just fucking around.
Okay.
That was one thing that kind of pushed me away, I guess you could say. Because it's a great game. It's awesome. But at times I was like, this is too easy.
Yes.
Like, I am not even, they're not even breaking through my shield. Like, I'm not even losing any health.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like I'm playing on easy, but I'm playing on the hardest difficulty.
Yeah. No, I will agree with you that the game is not very difficult. It's not. So the way me and Matt are playing it, and I wouldn't say that the game is easy. I would say that the game, everything is a bullet sponge, which it's Borderlands. So of course that's the case.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel difficult in a way that, you know, even Borderlands 3 had some difficulty. Some of the boss fights in Borderlands 3 were actually a challenge. Like one of the boss fights, this isn't a spoiler because it was in one of the pre-release materials, but there was the Goblins Tired of Forced Oppression quest line, the GTFO, which I loved it. It was a great quest line. But at the end, you fight Vorkanar, which is this big, you know, mechanical dragon neck, and it's a boss. It has a life bar, it has stages, and it was a complete and total cakewalk.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't feel in danger at all the entire time. I think I was so like zen that I forgot to move, and that was the only time I took damage, was because I wasn't moving. And so the fire that's slowly turning around the entire arena hit me, and I was like, oh, shit, that's right, I got to move.
Oh, shit, that's right.
I got to do something. I can't just stand here, which sucks because my build at the time had bonuses for standing still. So I was like, well, shit, this is not useful in this boss fight. but definitely, at least to where Matt and I have gotten in the game, I wouldn't say that the game is hard in the slightest.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that it's like too easy. I think it's borderline there, but I think that with this type of game, the further into the game you get and the more overpowered you get, the easier the game gets.
Yeah. And
as far as I can tell, the game doesn't have a system in place to address that. You can't like dial the difficulty up, which I think Borderlands 3 had some system like that where the difficulty could be scaled up more. As you were playing, but I could be misremembering that. It's been a while.
Right.
But I agree with you on that.
Yeah, that was a major con of mine. Like I've been running the Graveborn, which is the,
that's what Matt's playing.
Yeah. The lifesteal.
Yeah.
And, I've been running that with lifesteal guns and lifesteal grenades. And
oh yeah, just, so you're a fucking vampire.
It's done. Like it's a cake. Like it's not.
Yeah, because you can't take damage. Like as long as you're dealing damage, you're healing.
Yeah, it's literally a cakewalk.
What did you choose as your second? As your multi-class?
Spell shot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm playing Spore Warden.
I almost chose Spore Warden.
I'm enjoying it a lot. I chose Spellshot as my secondary class only because there's the ability for you to equip a second spell instead of having an ability.
Yeah.
Which I feel like later on could be useful. Right now I'm just using the bow and arrow skill that the Spore Warden starts with.
Yeah.
So you have another con in here that I'm going to argue with you about. But I agree with you that the game's a little easy. So go ahead. Right. What's this other con right here? I'm looking at it. It's even underlined because you spelled it wrong.
You're welcome. So when I played through it, the game is way too short. Let me get my sense before you pop in, because I know you disagree with this.
I'm going to let you explain why you think the game is too short.
So, following the storyline, hold on, you know what, before I start, let me give my reasoning on why I focused on mainly on the storyline.
Okay.
In every Borderlands game, you always go through the Borderlands game, and once you beat it, you run through the badass version.
Okay.
There's not a badass version.
No.
Yes, and I did not realize that. So, I would catch the lucky dice, and I would catch the poet things. I'd catch them as they come. Yeah. But I wasn't hunting them, because I was like, well, on the badass level, I'm going to max everything out. No worries. I'll just, there's no point to do it now, because once I beat the game, I'm just going to restart. Did not realize that. So will say a lot of my time I passed up on that, did not search. So this is why the game was too short. But it took me about 10 hours to beat the story.
Yeah, so you mainlined it.
Yeah, I mainlined it. And not only did I mainlined it, but I did side quests.
Yeah.
Like everything in the overworld is done. And okay. I did it within, and the whole story is done. And I still went to the side and, you know, did some major quest lines and stuff like that. Because you have to be a certain level to go to the next area. And so, yeah. So I would just do those main quests until I hit that level, and then I'd go do the quests. I'd keep doing side quests until I hit that level, and then go do the main line again. Took me 10 hours.
Okay.
10 hours. And I don't know. Maybe I just naturally speed ran it. Maybe I'm just, you know, the Borderlands god. I don't know.
I mean, that's possible. I mean, Matt and I have put 15 hours in so far. And where would you say, I told you where we were before the podcast, where would you say we are in the story?
You are not halfway.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. I will say that Matt and I have been taking our time in terms of, like, we're looking for those lucky dice. We're looking for the lost marbles. We're looking for the poetry pages, all of that. It's kind of how we played Borderlands 3. We tried to 100% each zone before we moved on to the next one. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of been doing that with this game. So I think that, I mean, that's definitely part of it, is we're playing it the same way we played that game. But I definitely don't think it's too short. I think it's just the way you played it made it too short. And a part of this game that's different from previous Borderlands games, in my opinion, is that, yeah, there's no badass version, which there needs to be a badass, like a new game plus situation. They need
it. I agree.
You know, that just, it's 2022. Any sort of game like this should have a new game plus kind of system. It's just expected. But in this particular game, it's, you know, you have so much class variety. You know, so you have the six base classes, and then you can mix them up. And every time you play the game, the build is going to be different. So I think the replayability comes through that. Plus, the little bit that I've heard about the end game is there's kind of like an endless dungeon situation.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to speak of that.
Yeah,
that's the piece I didn't want to say.
Yeah, no, that I had heard about before the game came out.
Okay.
The game ends with the end game is basically like an endless dungeon kind of thing, which would incentivize you to kind of, I mean, obviously there's some difficulty ramping up there.
No, I will say the game is fairly easy up until that, because each encounter throughout the dungeons, you can choose easy, medium, or hard. And when I say hard is hard, that shit is difficult.
Shit is hard.
That shit, it can get really, really difficult. If you don't, it's the same thing as the encounters. It's just a continuous encounter. Have you played Hades?
I have not.
All right. Hades, when you go through, there's different boons you can choose to help you boost your stats, or you can choose the money route. It's that.
Okay. So it turns into like a roguelite.
Yes. It's like a roguelike based off the encounters throughout the game.
Okay.
And all the bosses throughout the game. So it is a... It gets difficult.
Okay. Well, that, I mean, that's good to know that the difficulty does eventually get there.
Yeah.
I do wonder though, like, how does, you know, if you have that endless dungeon kind of situation, you know, that would definitely be a wrinkle in like a new game plus, like, cause then do you leave that open or do you make, you have to go through the whole game again to get to it? Although that's something they could easily figure out. But definitely, I agree with you on the difficulty. I don't agree with you on the length, but I understand where you're coming from, as it took you that amount of time.
Yeah.
And if I paid $60 for a game and I beat it in 10 hours, I would also probably be a little like, eh.
Well, I expected the story to be a little longer. There's way more content than 10 hours. This is a 60-hour plus content game easy.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely.
This is easily 60 hours, if not more.
Easily.
But the story, like, if you mainline the story, it went by way too quick for me.
It feels honestly like the story's length is a reaction to the negativity of Borderlands 3's campaign. Like, that campaign got a lot of shit for being too long.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in part, it wasn't that it was too long hours-wise. It was that the story wore out its welcome. Because yeah. It was just so grating and just honestly not funny. Like, that was the worst part about Borderlands 3, was that you had all these classic characters and you had these really funny moments and you had the side stories that, you know, had that typical Borderlands humor that was just super enjoyable. But then you would go off and you'd do the main story and you'd be like, this just isn't funny. It's not well written. And I honestly felt that it was too on the nose. Like, it was just like, you're not satirizing influencers. You're just, this is just how influencers are. Like,
yeah.
Like, you're not really making fun of them. Like, this is how people think about influencers anyway. So far with this game, it's actually funny.
Yeah. I've laughed a few times.
And it still has those moments. Like, there's been a couple of times where I've rolled my eyes or been like, oh, that joke didn't land. You know, and I mean, that's going to happen in a game that's just the jokes per minute is super high. You know, any game where you have that, you're going to have jokes that don't land. It sucks when they don't land because then it takes you out of it. But in terms of like raw humor, this is a huge step up. And then the story, I feel like if the story isn't that long, it's definitely a reaction to the previous game in a lot of ways.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I agree with you. I feel like the side quests in this story really make up, because I don't know if you've done any of the side quests, but they are lengthy.
We have done a handful. Since we're 100%ing every zone, we're doing all the side quests as we go along.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got into the zone for the GTFO mission.
Yeah.
And we pulled up the map. Literally, I was futzing around at the shops at the beginning of the area, and Matt was just like, dude, open the map. And I open the map and I zoom out and I'm like, holy shit. He's like, this isn't a main mission, is it? I said, no, this is a side mission. Like, this isn't a main mission.
Yeah.
And the zone is enormous, and there's like three other side missions or four other side missions in that same zone.
Yeah.
And we spent a whole like 5 hours in that area.
They're lengthy, aren't they?
Yeah.
I feel like that makes up for the short story.
Yeah, it does. The side quests being as lengthy as they are is a real treat, because that's where some of the content is.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, no, I will say, so I don't know about you. I've ran into a couple of bugs.
I also have, sadly.
There was one bug where my mouse wheel stopped working, and I couldn't scroll to switch weapons. I've had items in my inventory like not have icons or pictures. My mouse cursor has disappeared. Like the sell all junk button stopped working. I mean, I've had a decent spread of bugs. Nothing game breaking. But I have had a handful.
I've been lucky enough to not have those bugs. I've only ran into like one bug, I think. What was it? Oh yeah. You know the first area you kind of go into?
Yeah.
Like for the side quests. Right when I went in there, it would not show my quests anymore. It wouldn't tell me where to go. Like my whole quest log, I'd go to it and it wouldn't even exist. Like it'd just be blank.
Yeah.
It wouldn't show which ones I completed, which one I have outstanding. So I left the area and I came back and it would fix itself. Sometimes it wouldn't, and I'd just have to restart my whole game. Mm-hmm. And that happened a few times. And it was kind of frustrating. But, I mean, you know, what can you expect from a game that just came out? There's going to be a few bugs like that.
Well, you could expect no bugs. that would be a treat.
I mean, but with today's era of games, you know, there's going to be a few.
I will say that the amount of bugs in this game is a little higher than Borderlands 3 for me. Like, I didn't have any issues with Borderlands 3 in terms of bugs. But this game, I've definitely had nothing game-breaking. I mean, if you're, like, on the fence about this game, you know, the bugs aren't the reason you shouldn't get it.
Yeah, like, most definitely not.
There's nothing hugely game-breaking here. I think the most annoying one that I had was the not being able to scroll. Because I couldn't switch weapons. And you had to use the number keys to switch weapons, which is not easy when you're using WASD to move.
Yeah.
I will say, though, on the flip side, performance has been rock solid.
Oh, yeah. Performance has been fucking awesome.
Game runs like a charm, which is awesome because Borderlands 3 was a hog of a game that ran like absolute garbage when it came out. It just chugged, and it wasn't even consistent. It was just you would be playing the game and then it would just start to stutter really bad, and then it would be fine, and then some areas you wouldn't get, but like, you know, 45-50 FPS, other areas you'd be getting over 100. Like, it just wasn't very consistent. This I have been getting, outside of Brighthoof or in like really effects heavy combat, I'm easily getting 120 plus, if you know, at the very least 100 plus FPS. When one of the times that Matt went to feed his baby, I literally stood in one spot and I fucked around with the graphics settings and I was literally just changing them and I was seeing if I noticed a difference. And then I was changing them again and I was looking at the frame rate counter. And I was like, this is how they figure it. This is how those websites make those optimized settings guides. They just find a really heavy spot in the game and they stand there and they fuck with the settings and they watch the frame rate counter.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a fucking awesome game. It runs. I've not had a single frame rate issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. This game's awesome.
Yeah. So I have my optimized settings and they run like a charm and the game looks like Borderlands 3. I mean,
yeah, it does.
It's not revolutionary in its visuals, but that's okay because it has an art style that doesn't need to look super next gen. Like it just looks charming.
It's a timeless art style is what it is.
Yeah, it is. And I am, like I said, I am enjoying the shit out of this game. I didn't touch Tunic at all this week because I was
unbelievable.
I wanted to. There was a couple of times where I was like, oh, I kind of want to play Tunic. But then I was like, no, I want to play Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, like really bad. So I do plan on once getting through with this, I plan on getting back into Tunic because that game is also really, really good. But man, it's been a great fucking month. A great year for games. I mean, oh my God.
Yeah, it really, it very much has. It's been a fucking awesome year with Elden Ring, which I have not played yet, but I've heard nothing but great things about that game, so yes. I will be giving it a shot. I feel like you have to after hearing all the great things.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. I mean, I probably still will not be buying that game anytime soon, just because, like I've said a million times, it's just, I always buy those games with the intention of being like, this is the one. And every time I'm wrong.
Well, Tunic wasn't, you know? I mean, credit, you didn't buy Tunic.
I didn't buy Tunic, and I didn't go into Tunic knowing that it was going to be that kind of game. And so, the thing about Tunic is that it telegraphs its systems very, very well. It's not as obtuse. And I'm a firm, like, I do believe that the Souls games cheat sometimes. Like, I have been, like, I was playing this, and again, I'm not an expert on these games. I struggled to make it out of the tutorial zone on Dark Souls 3. Like, I just, I couldn't.
That's so funny.
And I literally, you can go on my YouTube and I have a video of me. Like, I think I'd said this before. Like, I had to drink a little and then I finally was able to beat it. But there are moments in that video where I feel like I have documented the phenomenon that I have said, told Matt and everybody that loves these games that I've experienced, which is that a boss will begin to animate for an attack and it will kind of track you through that animation. And then the boss will, like, a leap attack of some kind or a jab, some sort of an attack where they're going to attack where you are.
Right.
And there's a moment where in every other type of game of this type, once the animation hits a certain spot, they no longer track you. And the animation kind of commits, this is where I'm going. Dark Souls, like, I have watched bosses jump up into the air in, like, what is supposed to be some sort of arc attack, and then midair just hone in on where I am and boom.
Yeah.
And it becomes like I dodged or I sprinted away from where I thought the boss was going to hit me, and the boss still hit me anyway because in midair it kind of course corrected and went for where I was. And I was like,
it just locks onto you.
It just locks onto me. I said, I'm not going to, like, not every boss needs to be a heat-seeking missile. Like,
I agree.
You need to give the players opportunities to actually dodge out of the way instead of keeping my eye on the boss and timing that dodge to the exact moment right before he lands on me so that I literally don't get hit because of iframes. Like, that's honestly what it feels like to me, is that Dark Souls combat is not about honestly getting good. It's about manipulating the systems in the game that give you invincibility. Like, there are, when you dodge, there are frames of animation where you cannot be damaged at all. And so if you are good at manipulating that and timing that perfectly, which, you know, it is what it is, but I feel like you're not really timing a dodge at that point. You're timing
the system.
You're timing the system because you're not timing the dodge to be out of the way of the attack. You're timing the dodge to be in the attack at the exact right moment so that you don't take any damage.
Yeah.
And so Tunic is the complete opposite of that. At least what I've played so far, there are iframes, but the bosses that the enemies that I've fought, they haven't really done any of that bullshit where it's like they charge up an attack and they start to attack you, you move out of the way, and then they change position and hit you anyway.
Right.
So it feels less cheaty.
Less cheaty.
So, but I will agree, Elden Ring, fantastic game from what I've heard.
Yeah. So
for the people that like that kind of game, you know, more power to you. And for those who haven't, make sure you drop the
more power to you.
Yeah, more power to you. And the people who don't know if they like those games, I would highly advise that you really think about it before you buy it.
I mean, I feel like it's worth, and if you're at least decent at video games, I'd give it a shot, you know?
I mean, yeah, if you're good at video games, which I consider myself to be good at video games.
You got to give it a shot, Tyler.
You know, but maybe one day I will buy it and just be like, all right, whatever. But
what?
Today is not the day.
Today is not the day.
Today is not the day. Maybe when it goes on sale.
Yeah, it's fucking $60.
Yeah, it's $60. I've already bought my fair share of $60 games this year.
So. Yeah, with Tiny Tina just in the last little bit, you know?
Yeah, Tiny Tina. Forbidden West was another one.
Oof.
Yeah, I need to wait till it goes on sale.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I'm glad this game came out. I'm glad the game is good. I will say I was a little worried that it was going to suck.
I was too.
I feel like Borderlands 3 was, I don't want to say it wasn't a good game because I put 60 hours into it and I really enjoyed it. But I would definitely agree with the sentiment that it wasn't as good as it could have been. So I'm glad that this game was.
No, I agree with you all the way.
And I'm excited to play more as the week progresses.
Yes, yes. I will be playing more too. Just because. I mean, why not, you know?
But yeah. So, did you play anything else this week, or was it just Tiny Tina's?
Just Tiny Tina's.
I was going to say, it's okay to say it was just Tiny Tina's, because that's why.
During the week, I didn't have a lot of time, and then right when it hit the weekend, I was hanging out with friends, but I managed to just be Tiny Tina's before, you know, life got in the way.
Life always finds a way, but
yeah, I had to make sure. I was like, I cannot wait all weekend to play this game. I have to just, that's probably another reason why I just beelined it through the main story.
Yeah, I think that when Matt and I sat down to play it, it was very much like, I don't want to rush through this. I want to play at the pace that we both like and just have fun. You know?
Yeah.
And that was kind of what I went into it with. Because a lot of times, like Borderlands 3, I feel like that game was, the story was so grating and so obnoxious that if you played it by yourself, I completely understand why people were just like, fuck this. Like, it's just, I can't take it anymore. Even though the gameplay was solid and the gameplay was good.
Yeah.
Whereas I played it with Matt exclusively. I didn't play it by myself at all. So I didn't have that problem because we could both laugh about how bad it was. And like take away from that and just remember, like, the game is fun. We're playing a game and the set dressing isn't that great and the story's kind of garbo. But at the very least, we're having a good time. Tiny Tina's, I'm having a good time, and the story's not terrible, and it's not, like, in your face about shit, so already a huge step up.
I actually like the story from Tiny Tina.
I'm still trying to figure out exactly what's going on, other than that this Dragon Lord is back, and
it's just a D&D session. That's what's great about it. It could be a bad story, but it's like, so what? It's a D&D session. D&D sessions aren't perfect stories.
Oh, of course not. Of course not.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, no. I highly recommend Tiny Tina's. If you are a fan of Borderlands and you have people to play it with, I would recommend getting it.
Yeah.
If you just want a good co-op game to play and you like shooters, maybe wait till it's on sale. But yeah, it's a good game.
Yeah, great game.
Very, very good game. Now, drum roll, it's time for the news. And, well, in the worst kept secret of the video game industry for the last 6 months, Sony and PlayStation unveiled the new PlayStation Plus. Launching in June. So Project Spartacus has arrived and it is called PlayStation Plus.
Oh.
no crazy rebrand, no crazy name. But PlayStation Plus is now a three-tiered subscription service. Ooh. Instead of a single tier. And PlayStation Now is being kind of folded in and retired. So really quickly, we'll go over the tiers and then we'll discuss what we think of this. I will come at it from the perspective of someone who plays a PlayStation and actually pays for PlayStation Plus currently. And then I guess, as the doesn't own a PlayStation and doesn't,
that's me.
Yeah, doesn't pay for PlayStation Plus, but is a Game Pass user. Yeah, anyway, both are, so we can both comment on that, but you can come in and comment on that as well. So, the first tier is the PlayStation Plus Essential tier. And this is just current PlayStation Plus. It's $9.99 a month, $60 a year, which is the same price as currently. You get your exclusive discounts, you get online play, and you get 2 free games a month, which they were very specific about 2 free games per month. Interestingly, PlayStation Plus is advertised currently as 2 free games per month, but they've been giving like 3 or 4 games per month for the last year or two. So basically since the PlayStation 5 came out, they've been giving like 1 PS5 game and then 2 or 3 PS4 games. And then sometimes the PS5 game will include the PS4 copy, or vice versa. The PS4 game will include a PS5 copy. And so it just depends on the month. But I would be curious to see with these additional tiers if they will stick more stringently to that 2 games and what that looks like. The new tiers start from there. So you have PlayStation Plus Extra, which is $15 a month or $100 a year.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. So this is basically your Game Pass competitor. That's what this tier is. It's all of the benefits of Essential plus a catalog of up to 400 PS4 and PS5 games for download. And the downloadable game library will include some first-party games as well as third-party games. Some examples they gave of games that will be included at launch are Death Stranding, Spider-Man 2018, Spider-Man Miles Morales, Returnal, God of War, Mortal Kombat, just some examples of some games that they said will be in the service. The language, of course, is up to, and that is simply because not every market is going to have every game. So there are going to be some markets where certain games may not be available due to licensing, or those games may just not be available in that region. But in North America, it's probably going to be close to that 400. Which is where we are. So it'll probably be close to the full 400.
Yeah.
So far, this is not bad. 400 games would put it above Game Pass in terms of library size. PS4 and PS5 games for download is a pretty, you know, wide breadth. So you don't have to worry if you have a PS4, you're still going to get some games for it. And if you have a PS5, you get all of them because it can play PS4 games and you're not losing any benefits. So the real kicker is this PlayStation Plus Premium tier, which is just $3 more a month. It's $18 a month. Or $120 a year.
Sheesh.
You get all of the benefits of the previous tiers, plus more games, asterisk, game streaming, and time trials. So you get up to 340 additional games. And the reason I say asterisk is because some of those games are PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, and PlayStation Portable games that are available for download or streaming.
All right.
So you'll have a large library of classic games, excuse me, from old PlayStation consoles that you can download to your PlayStation 5 and play them, or you can download them to your PS4 and play them, or you can stream them to PS5, PS4, or PC. The asterisk comes in to the fact that they're also lumping in PlayStation 3 games that are only available to stream. So you won't be able to download the PlayStation 3 games and play them locally. You will have to play those via streaming. And then the additional benefits of this tier, cloud streaming becomes available not only for the PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, PlayStation Portable, and PlayStation 3 games, but also PlayStation 4 games from the Essential and the Extra and Premium tiers in markets where PlayStation Now is currently available. So if you're in a market where PlayStation Now is already available, then you will also, you'll be able to stream all the same games that you've been used to. So PlayStation 4, PlayStation 3 games, everything. And then you get time trials. So you'll be able to play limited time trials. So you can try games before you buy them. I think they're going to do a lot of those for their first party games, which we'll get to in a second. But I think that's where that's going to come into. And then if you live in a market where PlayStation Now and streaming are not available, PlayStation Plus Premium will be replaced with a lower tier service called PlayStation Plus Deluxe, which will only include access to the downloadable PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, PlayStation Portable, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 5 games, plus all of the other benefits except for the game streaming, and it will be available at a reduced cost.
I mean, for $120 a year to have access up to 100, I mean, have access up to like 700 games, that's not bad.
It just depends on what the games are.
It really depends, but
it really depends on what the games are.
If it's a bunch of oldies that, you know, I wouldn't mind that if I had a PlayStation. Or especially if it's newer games that you just don't want to spend $60. I mean, take two games that are $60 that you want to play in there. There you go. You've already covered your cost for $120 and you get 698 more games.
Yes. So the value here is, I think it's very good.
I think it has potential.
It has potential. I put in the notes, I'm really attracted to that $15 a month plan, because 400 games for PS4 and PS5, that's a lot of games.
That is a lot of games.
The premium tier being just a few dollars extra a month, it really depends on, one, how good the cloud streaming is in PlayStation Now, whether that's improved in the last since I've last used it. For those PS3 games, because there are a handful of PS3 games that I would want to play. And then just what is the selection of classic games? Like, I highly doubt you're going to see, like, Tony Hawk 3 in here.
Oh.
The reason I say that is not to do with the fact that it's a game that they would just not want to put in here. It's licensing. You know, it has licensed music in it, so you can't really get around that.
Yeah,
there's a lot of licensing stuff that has to be dealt with these classic games when they're being distributed digitally. It's different if you could just plop in your old PlayStation disc and play it. And I think this is going to be, that's where the rub is going to come in for me, is that this is proof that you can have a PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, and PlayStation Portable emulator on a PlayStation 5. And if I can't download PSP games that I paid for and bought digitally on my account years ago, or if I can't plop in a PS1 or a PS2 disc that I own into my PS5 and play these games in the emulator on the system, it kind of sucks because the emulator's there. And like, I know they're doing validation and things. They're probably making sure that the games work and they run well and they don't have any like really bad bugs. But like, even putting it in as a setting, like, hey, we don't recommend you do this because you may play a game. You may put a game disc in that just doesn't work. But at least let me try.
I have the opportunity to do it instead of just not having it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if it's half-assed, who cares?
Yeah, exactly. But my first video game console was a PlayStation 1. I have owned every PlayStation system. PlayStation 1, PS2, PSP, PS3, PS Vita, PS4, PS5.
Ooh,
and I own PS4, base PS4, and PS4 Pro. I own both. So I have literally grown up with this platform. And I'm a PC-first gamer. I love Xbox. I love Nintendo. I love PlayStation, but PlayStation has a very special place in my heart as far as game platforms go, because it's just been there from when I was a wee lad.
When you were born, you just came out with a PSP.
Well, I mean, that would be pretty awesome, considering that I was born about 10, 11 years before the PSP came out. So that would
you, the time traveler,
had the world's first PSP.
The world's first PSP, you had it.
I was 2 and a half when the PlayStation 1 came out. So, like, I'm old.
Fine. You came out with the PlayStation 1. All right.
I came out with a Super Nintendo controller in my hand.
Like, all right, we'll go with that.
But so this, if that classic game library is really, really good, I could see myself opting for that just for that purpose. If that classic library is decent, if it's not that great, if it's very kind of spotty, I don't play a lot of games on my PlayStation. Like, I play first party games and then like a handful of third party games. Like I said before, like your Tony Hawk games, the Crash Bandicoot remaster, the, you know, Crash 4, the Spyro remaster, those kinds of games, those are available on PC, but I bought and played them on the PlayStation because those are the types of games that I just associate with that system.
It's kind of like playing Halo on a PC. Well, actually, I take that back. Never mind.
That's a first-person shooter. That's a little different. Yeah. But like Horizon Zero Dawn came out on PC. I didn't buy it on PC. You know, Uncharted's available. Is going to be available. Uncharted 4 and Lost Legacy are coming to PC later this year.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm not going to buy them on PC.
Oh, I am.
God of War is on PC. I haven't bought it. You know, and some of that is because these games that I've played, and some of it, you know, Death Stranding is on PC, but I'm not going to buy it.
Deathloop.
You know, Days Gone. Like, I'm not going to buy these games. Deathloop is a completely different story, though. Like, that's a first-person shooter, so I wouldn't have bought that on the PlayStation, but I'm not buying it because it's coming to Game Pass. I just got to wait.
No.
Well, I mean, it's a Microsoft game. Yeah. So it's a Bethesda game, so of course it's going to come to Game Pass after a year, which will be in like September. So I just got to wait it out till September. But yeah, so I don't know if that library of 400 games, it would really depend on what games are in there. And like, is it going to be new games and old games, or is it just going to be older games? Because like, if it's not going to have day and date, like, obviously, they already said, we're going to get to Jim Ryan's statement in a minute, where he basically says, we're not bringing our games to this service day one. Which really speaks highly of your service.
Yeah.
But I would like to see what the third-party offering looks like. Because if it's like, oh, well, Final Fantasy 16 is going to be on this day one. Well, then that's a whole fucking different ballgame. Like, if you're going to have these third-party games coming to the service when they come out, that's a whole different ballgame. Because then it's like, okay, well, now it makes sense.
Yeah.
But if it's just going to be a selection of, like, year-plus-old games, then it's great for someone who gets a PS5 next year. It's great for somebody that maybe hasn't had the time or the money to buy all of the games they wanted to play. But if a lot of those games were also in Game Pass at some point, for a lot of people, if you have a PC or an Xbox, this becomes less of an option, which is where I turn to you to kind of give your perspective on this.
Oh, I mean, I think it's great. I think it's great competition, but it's one of those things where if I have a PlayStation and I have an Xbox, the game library for the PlayStation subscription would have to be way different than what's on the Xbox Game Pass. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you would have to have those first-party games, but I feel like Sony wouldn't want to add those first-party games. I mean, like, think about it. You have God of War, you have Uncharted, you have all these great games that are just to Sony. If you add it in, nobody's going to buy them. They're just going to get the Game Pass. Well, yeah. Not the Game Pass, but, you know, the what is it, PS Plus?
Yeah, PlayStation Plus.
Yeah, they would just get the PlayStation Plus instead of actually buying those games. You wouldn't make as much money off of it.
Exactly.
So it's a funky thing, because since the Xbox Game Pass is already a thing, you have to have these older games that you would want to play and want to go back. But also, like you said, have the newer games coming out to it to compete with the Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah.
I'm happy with Game Pass. But if I had a PlayStation, it really depends on the library. 700 games is great, but if it's 700 garbage games, then I'm a pass.
Well, I think if you only have a PlayStation, then this is a no-brainer. Like,
Oh, yeah.
If you only have a PlayStation, don't listen to us. This is a no-brainer. Yes. You're getting even the mid-tier, like not even bumping up to the premium. Like, if you don't give a shit about streaming PlayStation 3 games and you don't give a shit about old PlayStation 1, 2, and PSP games, and you don't really care about being able to, you know, try games before you buy them, this $15 a month tier is basically Xbox Live or Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. You're getting Game Pass minus the streaming. Game Pass, you're getting free games every month, which I firmly believe that this is going to change, but I do think PS Plus's monthly free games will probably go down the shitter.
Kind of like Games with Gold.
Like Games with Gold did. They will push all of the really good games into the upper tier where you get all the games to download rather than, you know, the monthly free games. But if you are a PlayStation Plus member, nothing will change for you.
No,
this is all optional. It's all additional monthly money. If you don't want to pay for it, you can keep your current subscription. Everything's good. And something that somebody noticed in the text of the blog post is that if you currently subscribe to PlayStation Now, which is, I think, $60 a year, you will be automatically upgraded to the premium tier of PlayStation Plus for the remainder of your subscription when June rolls around.
Yeah.
So if you can get a year subscription to PlayStation Now, now would be the time to do it.
Now would very much
be the time to do it. Now would be the time to do it. There's no word on if you're subscribed monthly to PlayStation Now, if you will get bumped up to premium at $9.99 a month for a period of time. But I doubt that, honestly.
No, going back to what you said, though, if you're strictly a PlayStation user, this is undisputed. But looking at it as I don't have a PlayStation, but if I did, looking at it as all the consoles, it very much depends on the library.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that the extra tier is probably where most people are going to end up.
The $15 a month?
Yeah. Even people like you and me that have Game Pass, play on PC and Xbox and PlayStation, I think that if you and I were to both have PlayStations like me, I'll probably end up on that tier simply because of the library, and it'll take away the desire and the urge to buy every game when it comes out. Because I can say, okay, well, if they're putting things like Death Stranding and Spider-Man and Miles Morales and Returnal and God of War on the service, I mean, Spider-Man and Miles Morales, that game is not even 2 years old. So that game came out at the launch of the PS5. So if they come up with a solution where they're like, okay, well, we're going to release these games, and then once they hit 1 year, they're going to go on the service, then all of a sudden people like me are going to be like, okay, well, do I really need to play this game now, or can I wait? And so it'll start to have the same effect as Game Pass in that regard. So I don't think it'll be a year. It'll probably be longer than a year.
Oh, you think longer?
So again, Sony doesn't have the deep pockets that Microsoft has. Microsoft has said that they don't lose money on Game Pass. I don't believe them. I just don't believe them, because the amount of money that they have to pay out to these services and the amount of these companies and the amount of money they're making from it cannot equal. There's just no way that is evening out.
Well, I mean, you do have to look at it. Like, I guarantee maybe 85% of Xbox players probably has a Game Pass. I mean, the game library is insane. Releasing Forza 5 on the day it came out to the Game Pass, I feel like that alone got so many people to subscribe.
Like I said, I think that Game Pass has become a requirement. Like, it is not an optional subscription if you have an Xbox. Like, you have to have Game Pass. Yeah. I would say Game Pass is more important than Xbox Live is now.
Oh, easily. Like, undisputed.
If you only have $10 a month to spend, get Game Pass. Don't get Xbox Live.
Yeah.
Because a lot of multiplayer games are free to play now, and those you don't need gold to play anymore. So there's no reason to get that unless you're wanting to play Call of Duty or something. And in that case, just bump up to Game Pass Ultimate and pay the $15 a month and get Live with it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that, and I think in the same way that Game Pass is a required subscription if you have an Xbox, I think that this extra tier of PlayStation Plus will be a required subscription if you have a PlayStation, just because of the value of that back catalog of games. But since we're kind of talking about what the first party situation looks like, so the CEO of PlayStation, Jim Ryan, in a interview with GameIndustry.biz, he was asked, it was literally probably the first question they asked him was basically, what about first party games? And he said, I'll read the quote from the article here. We feel like we are in a good virtuous cycle with the studios where the investment delivers success, which enables yet more investment, which delivers yet more success. We like that cycle and we think our gamers like that cycle. In terms of putting our own games into the service or any of our services upon their release, as you well know, this is not a road that we've gone down in the past, and it's not a road that we're going to go down with this new service. We feel if we were to do that with the games that we make at PlayStation Studios, that virtuous cycle will be broken. The level of investment that we need to make in our studios would not be possible, and we think the knock-on effect on the quality of the games that we make would not be something that gamers want. So, basically what Sony is saying in a roundabout way is they don't believe that they can make the money from the subscription that they currently make selling games at $70 a pop. And they believe that that would reduce the amount of investment that they could make into their own studio's ability to make games. And a part of me agrees to an extent. So let me explain. And then you can kind of rebuff or come at me however you want to.
All right. I'll hear you out this time, I guess.
Xbox. All right. Think about their biggest core franchises. They're what? Forza, Halo, Gears of War. Right?
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
You got some sleepers in there that have, you know, steadily become pretty big successes, like Sea of Thieves is apparently a pretty big game.
Surprisingly, would have never guessed, but
you know, I enjoyed that game the little bit that I played of it, but it didn't strike me as a game that had longevity.
Yes, no,
and yet I was highly proven wrong.
After about 20 hours, I was kind of bored.
Yeah, I'd say about 20-30 hours, I was just like, this is just it's beautiful water, and that's about it.
It's awesome water, great with friends, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it literally is one of the few games that nearly gave me a heart attack when a skeleton popped out of the ground. Nearly shit my pants, screaming on the live stream. It's hilarious. But you think of their core franchises. What do all of those three franchises have in common? They are single player experiences that are bolstered and in some cases overshadowed by their multiplayer. And so, like Forza. You can drive around by yourself and it's a great game, but racing is where that game really shines, and you can race against AI and it's a fun experience, or you can race against real people and all of a sudden it's even more fun.
Yeah.
Halo. The campaigns are great. Minus Halo 5.
Part of Halo 4.
And some would argue Halo 4 as well. I think Halo 4 is a little underrated. myself. I think people hate on that game a little too much.
I dislike Halo 5 way more than Halo 4.
Halo 5 is an actual, like, yes, honest to God dumpster fire. Yes. Halo 4 is more divisive.
But conversation for another day.
Yeah, conversation for another day. But what gives that franchise staying power and longevity is its multiplayer. Gears of War, fantastic storylines. People fucking love the multiplayer. And so Microsoft has done a very good job with their first-party games of being heavily focused on games that are post-launch monetizable. They're games that we can make money on ad nauseum forever. Because, yes, you can get into the latest Halo for free. You can get into Gears of War for free. You can get into Forza for free as part of the subscription. But microtransactions and DLCs and all these things that they spit out a ton of content into those avenues, all of which you have to pay for. And that's where they can make money on. On the flip side of the coin, you look at Sony. What types of games are they most known for?
Single players.
Single player.
Undisputed.
Undisputed single player experiences that are standalone.
Yes.
So these are games that, you know, Gran Turismo 7 being a dumpster fire of an exception, for the most part, these are games that you buy once and you never have to spend any more money on. And it allows them to put a lot of attention to detail and a lot of focus on that singular experience. But then once the game is out, you don't want to be pumping money into it, but you also don't want to be undervaluing that $70 price point, because you're pumping value into these games based on that. And when they do release a DLC, like they did with Horizon, with the Frozen Wilds, the Lost Legacy for Uncharted, that was originally a DLC for Uncharted 4. It turned into a standalone game. But in both of those cases, you could download those DLCs completely separately from the main game. You didn't have to own Horizon Zero Dawn to play Frozen Wilds. You didn't have to own Uncharted 4 to play The Lost Legacy. So even when they do DLC, they kind of go a little hard on it. And they put in a lot of time and effort. And I kind of agree that if all of a sudden I'm paying $120 a year on these games, and before I was paying $200, $300 a year on these games, I'm the exact person that Sony doesn't want subscribing to this service and not buying their first party games, because it's all I buy.
Yeah, I mean, for somebody who plays PC and Xbox, that's all they are going to buy.
All they're going to buy. And so I can understand in their mind where, hey, we have to protect the value of our games, and we don't see them as something that we can throw on this service to add value to the service, because long term, we don't think the service is going to provide the same level of return, because not all of that money will go to Sony. Some of that money will go to these other developers and publishers. So they're not making the same amount of money per sale as they are, say, when you go and buy Horizon on the PlayStation Store for $70. You know, where they're making 100% of that revenue. Well, now they have to share that $15 a month with not only themselves, but Activision and EA and all these other studios and yeah, publishers. Activision for a short period of time.
Yeah.
Probably not at all, to be honest.
You never know. You never know.
But most likely, it'll probably be Ubisoft, if I had to guess, because Ubisoft doesn't have a lot of games on Game Pass. So I'd have a strong feeling that Ubisoft will probably be a partner here. But I mean, that's basically what you're looking at. And I kind of get where they're coming from. But at the same time, Xbox has set the standard of what this service looks like. And this service looks like first party games, day and date on the service for no extra charge. So now, again, there's a lot of unknowns here. They could be like, well, if you're a PlayStation Plus extra or premium subscriber, even though it doesn't say additional discounts, they could easily do something like, we'll give you 20% off of first-party games or 25% off of first-party games. I think we've discussed this in the past.
That would be ideal. I could get behind that.
Plus the game trials. I could definitely see them making it so that every single first-party release has a 5 or a 10-hour trial where you can jump in, download the game, try the game, and then if you like it, you can pay for it, and the game's already downloaded, so you don't have to wait for it to download again. And you were able to try the game and see if you liked it. And then if you didn't like it, you don't buy it, but maybe when the game comes to the service later, because now that you're paying $18 a month, so it doesn't hurt if you try the game and don't like it and don't buy it, because you're still paying for the subscription. But then later on, when the game comes to the service, well, now it's no extra charge. You're like, well, fuck it. Let me try it again. And maybe you like it then. So you stay subscribed because occasionally that happens. So I think they still have a lot of questions they need to answer. But I can kind of understand where they're coming from. Would I love to see those games available day and date? Obviously. But I also kind of understand where they're coming from.
No, I agree with you. Where they're coming from, it's totally reasonable. Like with Microsoft having, I guess you could say, the bag, the pocket, the money to be able to, to throw out their first party games on day one while Sony doesn't. However, I still think for you to compete with Game Pass, you have to throw out some. Or, like you said, I would really get behind this. Throw like 20% off, 30% off for those first party games if you're a PS Plus. I could really get behind that. Because you are, from a consumer point of view, you are still saving money, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And you have all these games, and when the first parties come out, you have access. You can pay $40 compared to $70 for a first party game, enjoy it, and then after a year, it'll be on the PS Plus, a year and a half. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, and I think that that's ultimately, if I was Sony, that's what I would be considering. That's what I would be doing. But ultimately it comes down to what they can afford. But they also say they're not done acquiring more studios, and they are, you know, transitioning to a services based, you know, that they want more games that are live services in addition to their traditional single player games.
Any more studios?
They say they are not.
Microsoft's a monopoly.
Sony still isn't quite there yet. But I mean, they say that it's all about choice. That's kind of what their mantra is, that it is all about it's all about choice.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that in the long run, they needed to make this change.
Oh yeah, they most definitely did.
So there's a lot of question marks. Like, live service games are a natural fit for this. So like, instead of paying for games that are full of instead of paying for Gran Turismo, make it free, make it a part of the subscription. Then it doesn't hurt as bad when you have to buy those credits. Like, it still sucks, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't hurt quite as bad when you got the game for free. You know, and the same could be said for something like Destiny 2. Like, throw the...
I love how you say for free. Quote, unquote, for free.
For free. But, I mean, think about it. Like, when I look at Game Pass, yes, I'm paying $10... Or actually, I'm paying $15 a month for Game Pass. When I look at the Game Pass game library and I'm looking at games, I don't view them with any sort of monetary value. I literally view them as if they're free.
Yeah.
Because I don't have to pay anything to download it because I'm already paying for the subscription. So I download the game because it's free. Why not? And then I try it. And if I don't like it, it's like, oh, well, it was free. So, you know, uninstall.
For example, Tunic.
A perfect example of a game that I probably would not have paid $30, $40 for. And then because it was in the subscription, I was like, I'm hearing good things. Let me try it. And then fucking loved it.
Yeah.
You know? So we'll see. The service launches in June. The updates to the PlayStation Plus services, they'll launch in June. And it does look like they're doing a staggered rollout of this. I think that they said they want everything done by the end of June. Let me go back into this blog post and look. So basically, they say here that I just had it a second ago and I scrolled right past it. Here it is. In the June timeframe, we'll begin with an initial launch in several markets in Asia, followed by North America, Europe, and the rest of the world where PlayStation Plus is offered. We aim to have most PlayStation Network territories live with our new PlayStation Plus game subscription service by the end of the first half of 2022. And they also plan to expand their cloud streaming to additional markets. We'll provide more details on that later. So basically, it sounds like throughout the month of June, they will roll this out. And it looks like it'll start in Asia and then come everywhere else. Which is a nice nod to the Asian market.
Yeah, a nice nod. But for everybody in America, it kind of sucks.
Well, I mean, listen, Sony's a Japanese company. Japan is their home turf. And they have given us more than enough in terms of benefits for a very long time.
They need to just suck it up and release it here first.
PlayStation was actually run out of America for the last 10 years, and then it transitioned to Europe with PlayStation 5. But it has not been – PlayStation has not been, like, Japanese, like, operated for about – I would say – I think it's like 10, 12 years now. So they just are still owned by a Japanese company.
So, well, at least it's cool they go back to their home turf. Yeah. You know, it's like a little nod.
Gotta toss them a bone from time to time.
Gotta give them something.
Gotta give them something.
I mean, Japan has Nintendo. Like, come on, please.
They do have Nintendo.
Give us something.
Yeah, they do have Nintendo. But yes, give Japan something. Speaking of services, though, since we just got done talking about PlayStation Plus, Microsoft is not standing still. They're not resting on their laurels and reportedly is going to introduce an Xbox Game Pass family plan later this year. So this has been rumored for a while that they've been contemplating some sort of family plan. They used to have that Xbox Gold family subscription at the kind of at the beginning of the Xbox One generation. And then they kind of, or towards the end of the 360 generation, and then they integrated it into the Xbox Live sharing that they do now, where only the account whose Xbox is primary needs to have Xbox Live for everybody on the system to have it.
Yeah.
That's kind of how they did that, but this is something that apparently they're going to announce in the near future. Will reportedly provide access to Game Pass for 5 players and will be cheaper than the cost of separate accounts and will integrate into Microsoft's 365 family account system, which I currently use actually because I have my little sister's Xbox account as a sub under mine. And so I could
make it easier
because I already pay for it. So why not? She's paying for her own. Why not just give it to her?
Yeah.
There's no information on whether this will be separate for each tier of Game Pass service or if it'll only be available for specific ones. For those who are not familiar or don't remember off the top of their heads, Game Pass currently comes in 3 flavors, Xbox Game Pass for $10 a month, PC Game Pass for $10 a month, neither of which include multiplayer online capabilities, which is kind of a lie. The PC version does because we don't pay for multiplayer on PC.
Yeah.
But
Xbox, another reason why PC is better. But
yeah. Xbox Game Pass for console doesn't include online. And then Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, which is $15 a month, which has PC, console, and online multiplayer and game streaming through Xbox Cloud Gaming. This Verge article that I'm reading from actually has a mistake here, because EA Play is not exclusive to Game Pass Ultimate, guys. That is available in the regular tiers. So it'll be interesting to see what this looks like. But it would certainly be a money saver for a lot of people, depending on how much it costs.
Yeah.
Like, if you're only, like me, if it's only two accounts and it's cheaper to just have two separate accounts, then I'll stick with two separate accounts. But, and I highly doubt they're going to charge cheaper than two.
Yeah.
But I could see this being very useful for friend groups who want to like all chip in to Xbox Game Pass.
But what friend group would all want to chip in?
I don't know. Say a friend group that all lives really close to each other and all has PCs and or Xboxes that we could benefit from. Just a thought.
A rare occurrence, basically.
Yes, definitely a super rare occurrence. But not that Microsoft would want you to do that.
Maybe like a fraternity, you know?
You know, yeah. But I could see this being super cool for like gamer families. You know?
Oh, yeah.
For mommy and daddy are gamers and you know, the kids are gamers. And you need like five different Xbox accounts.
Yes, of course, because a normal family household has five different Xbox accounts.
Well, I mean,
five different Xboxes.
Assuming that you have two gamers with two kids, which is kind of the average for the country, that's four. So, I mean,
with what, two Xboxes, maybe?
Well, with the Series S being so affordable and darn available, theoretically, everyone could have their own Xbox.
You think that's a lot of money?
Well, I mean, it depends on how you look at it. Like, it's a lot of money for four of them. I mean, that's what, $300, that's $1,200. But if you think about it in the sense that, like, okay, well, it may not be all three of them or everybody gets a Series S. It could be like Daddy has his Xbox Series X in the living room, and then Timmy and Julie have their own Series S's in their room. And then, you know, mommy uses cloud gaming on her phone or something.
I feel like if I was a dad and I'm buying four or five of these bitches, they all better be running at the same time. Like, ain't no way I'm gonna buy like two extras. Just like someone could easily just log off and a little Timmy could log on. And be like, hey, Dad, I'm going to use your Xbox. Cool.
Well, yeah, you say that until you actually have children. So I don't have kids, but I have siblings. And I lived at home for a very long time with said siblings. And so I know exactly what it's like when you're playing a game on your console or your PC and they want to come in and play a game. And, like, it's – you don't want to be like, nah. You don't want to be like, yes, go ahead, when you're in the middle of playing a game.
I'm going to be like, no, get away.
That's when you get them their own Xbox so they don't bother you. And you just be like, go play your own.
Go, leave, you know, skedaddle.
Go.
Run away, little one.
Yeah. Because if you tell them no, they're just going to be disappointed.
So?
They're just going to be sad. Nah. They're just going to be sad, man. And speaking of sad... We got a couple of depressing stories.
Yes, yes.
So I called it. I was right.
Ether, you were right.
It has been canceled.
Yeah. You actually called that on the podcast, I think.
I did. When EA said they were not going to have EA Play, I had said that I didn't think E3 was going to happen. And it is not. E3 2022 was originally going to be a digital event. They canceled it, and now they're saying that they will be back and reinvigorated in 2023. No, they won't.
Oh, you think no?
No. I think E3 is dead.
You think it's done?
I think it's done.
No shot.
I think it was already dying before COVID. Like, the E3 2019 was... E3 2018 was bad. E3 2019 was by far probably the worst E3 I had ever watched. Because if I remember right, Nintendo wasn't there, Sony wasn't there, EA wasn't there, and you had Microsoft, Bethesda, and Ubisoft, and that was basically it. And a lot of companies just put their games on the Microsoft stage rather than actually go. So, and then COVID happened and knocked out E3 2020 and E3 2021.
Yeah.
And everybody thought E3 2022 would come back, and then they announced that it was going to be digital only back in January, and now they are canceling it outright.
No, that's crazy.
So E3 is dead.
But still, it's like the biggest gaming, what is it?
It was the biggest week in gaming every year.
Yeah, every year.
I mean, every company had their had events scheduled around E3. And, you know, that was what you did that week. It was all games all the time. And it sucks that it's gone. So Jeff Keighley, who is the he's the creator of the Game Awards. He organized for the last 2 years. He organized something called the Summer Game Fest, which is basically like a summer long event where game developers and publishers would hold like events with him to show off their games. And it was kind of meant to be a replacement for E3. However, this year, they will be kicking off Summer Game Fest with a spectacular live kickoff show. And it appears that Jeff Keighley might be positioning himself to replace E3 with the Summer Game Fest. So E3 may be dead.
But soon to find its predecessor.
RIP E3, long live E3.
Long live E3.
Because that's basically what Summer Game Fest is.
Yeah.
It's just not officially held by the Electronic Software Association. Who did E3. So E3 is dead.
E3, rest in pieces.
Rest in peace, E3.
Rest in peace, E3.
So Nintendo, a couple years ago, announced the Breath of the Wild sequel.
Ooh.
Which is beautifully titled sequel to The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And they announced it, I think, 2 years ago, 2021, or 20, no, it was 2020. It was announced 3 years ago.
Oh!
June of 2019 is when they announced it. And it has been delayed.
Oh.
2023.
Oh, my.
However, that's a date. Spring of 2023.
No, don't even get your hopes up.
And the reason I say that is because they never set a date before. So they were literally delaying it from a week, it's coming, to it's coming in spring of 2023. They never announced a release date for it. They kind of said, we're kind of hoping to get it out in 2022. So.
Don't get your hopes up. They always like to delay shit.
It needs more time. That's what they said. They need more time to make the game, games take a while to make now. So
they do,
you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
And so, yeah, if you really liked Breath of the Wild and you were excited for that, it has been delayed.
Yay.
You know, the string of cancellations and delays continues even post COVID.
Yes, sadly.
It just continues to amaze me that, I mean, obviously, anybody that worked in the industry was saying there's going to be long-lasting impacts from COVID. That at the beginning, it was like a lot of the games that came out in 2020, these were games that were almost basically done. And so it was like, we're just pushing them out because they're basically done and we can finish them up at home. And then 2021 was like a barren landscape of video games because a lot of the games that would have come out in 2021 were kind of in a stage of post-production that maybe didn't translate as well to at-home work.
Right.
And now this year, we're finally starting to see a return to normal cadence and, you know, quality. Hopefully. And, but it still seems like there's going to be these lingering kind of like, nope, we have to delay it because of some setback from COVID. Or, you know, now you'll have fucking Ukrainian based game development studios that are like, we had to set it back because war, like,
because of war.
Sorry, we had to delay it because there was literally like missiles landing in our parking lot. So,
yeah. You
know, boo hoo, your game doesn't come out on time.
Boo hoo, cry about it.
Boo hoo, like,
what?
Cry me a river. At least you don't have missiles landing in your fucking parking lot.
Right.
So, yeah, so the delays continue. Speaking of delays.
Oh, no.
So, when we first launched this podcast, we had opened it up with what some of our most anticipated games were. And Chase, do you remember what one of those most anticipated games was for
you? Oh, yes, yes. I was very looking forward to Tiny Tina's Wonderland.
yes, you were looking forward to Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, which just came out. We were both looking
forward
to that. It was a great game.
Yes.
But there was another game that you were looking
for.
Elden Ring, which also came
out. Oh, yes, yes, Elden Ring. I was looking forward to that.
Yeah, you were looking forward to Hogwarts Legacy, which looks really, really good from what we've seen.
Looks great so far. What's the other one?
It's a zombie game, I think. It was.
It's State of Decay 3.
State of Decay 3. Which, yes. Apparently, and honestly, based on the quality of State of Decay and State of Decay 2, I would have guessed this. State of Decay 3 is locked in pre-production as the studio is in disarray, which is quite the article title from Polygon. I love it. So this game was announced in July of 2020 at the Xbox Game Showcase. And according to reports from Kotaku, that was well before developers felt the game was ready for an announcement.
Wow. And they still announced it?
They still announced it. Undead Labs veterans, followed by a rushed internal demo from Microsoft leadership, accelerated their feeling of disarray. So they basically, it was announced and then they rushed a demo for Microsoft. And now, there apparently has supposed to have been two more internal demonstrations that have not happened. And developers have revolted inside the studio. A lot of people have left the studio. It looks like, Kotaku reports that the studio is battling not just its own internal issues, but it's battling big industry issues such as toxic workplaces, discrimination, and
my burnout. God. Can we get past this shit already? Treat another person like a human. That's all it is.
Yeah.
I love that game too. It's like the bad taste Ubisoft left in my mouth. Now when this game comes out, I'm going to be like, wow, they were hating on each other and discriminating each other while it happened. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So they're still at square one with a lot of stuff, according to a developer from inside the studio. It's something else.
Let me ask you.
Real quick.
This game. Good.
As I say, an unidentified developer told Kotaku, if this is what pre-production was like, there was no way I was sticking around for full production.
Oh, wow.
Which is basically like, we haven't even started making the game yet. We're still in kind of the pre-development stuff. And if this is what it's like now, I'm out.
And they just, why did they announce it? They got my hopes up for nothing.
Microsoft has this problem, though.
I guess.
They do this all the time. So what were you going to ask me? What was your question?
I was going to ask you, do you think it's actually going to come out? Or you think it's just going to be one of those games that they're going to come out later and be like, we've canceled production?
Well, Crackdown 3 eventually came out.
Yeah, but I mean.
And that game, let me just do a quick Google. That game was showed off. In 2013. It was originally set to be released in 2016, and it finally came out in 2019.
Oh my god.
So, do I think this game is going to come out? I think the answer to that question is, I don't know.
I hope it comes out.
I think I hope so. If there's a franchise that Microsoft would be willing to sacrifice for PR purposes, I think State of Decay is that franchise.
No. I love State of Decay. State of Decay 2, awesome. State of Decay 1, exactly like 2.
So I've played both of those games.
You don't like them?
I do not like them. I love them. They are clunky and convoluted and just obtuse in a way that is like, I understand what I'm supposed to be doing, but you're not letting me do it. Like, you're just getting, the game gets in your way and it's a buggy mess.
Oh yeah.
It's just not they're not good games. I can see people enjoying them. Like, even, you know, even the smelliest of turds can be shiny.
Oh yes. And that turd is very shiny.
But I feel like this is a developer that has done the same thing twice, and it clearly isn't working for them as a studio, and it's clearly also not working as a product. Like, I just don't think it has a widespread appeal. I don't think there's a lot of State of Decay fans.
Oh, well, I'm about to get everybody on this game.
I mean, it's on the Game Pass, State of Decay 2. Yes. I think State of Decay 1 might be on there too, but
they both are.
I mean, I don't know what sales look like for this series, but it's definitely, when they announced it, I thought it was something else at first. And then it's literally, I was like, oh, this trailer is really dope. This is super exciting. And then when it said State of Decay 3, I said, oh, okay, never mind.
Never mind.
Yeah, it was like an instant turnoff. Like, it was just an
instant. Sleeping on it.
Well, I may be sleeping on it, but soon this game may be sleeping forever.
Hey, now, you watch your tone.
At this rate, State of Decay 3 may be swimming with the fishes.
Swimming with the fishes in your fishbowl.
Sooner than later.
Yes. Yeah. Well, there's something about having a survivor group, and you could just walk out of your house and have permadeath with even your favorite character.
Yeah.
I love it. I don't know why. It's just a fun aspect to me.
Yeah.
But I agree. It's a pretty shitty game, but it's just fun to me.
Yeah. I mean, more power to you. If you like it, you like it. You know, people are allowed to like the games they like. But I mean, think about it this way. In 2020, Microsoft showed off teases for Fable, which has no release date.
Oh, nice.
Forza Motorsport 7, which was supposed to come out, which normally in the normal release cadence for Forza games would have come out last year. And it didn't. And this year is Horizon. So presumably it's coming out next year. They announced Rare's next game, which is Everwild, which also has no release date. They showed off games from, you know, they announced The Outer Worlds 2. They announced, what was that game from Obsidian? It was a RPG, like a fantasy RPG that they announced that has no release date. Like, I mean, they don't have, Avowed has no release date.
Yeah.
The Outer Worlds 2, no release date. This is a typical thing that Microsoft does. They announce games way before they're ready. And, I mean, Halo Infinite. That was announced years ago.
Yeah, that was announced a while ago.
That was announced as an Xbox One X game. Like, that wasn't even announced as a next-gen Xbox game. It got reworked.
Into one.
You know, it's just like, come on now. And so, what the hell?
No, I agree. What the hell? Make my fucking game.
And so, Microsoft, come on, stop it. Get help.
Bad Microsoft.
Like, stop announcing games so far out in advance. And I want every developer to do this. Stop announcing games years before they're going to come out. Like, one or two years is fine. But when you get into, like, 3, 4, 5 years, stop it. Like, don't do it. It's one thing if you announce your game, like, say you announce a game in 2019 and you say it has a spring 2021 release. And you announce it, like, fall of 2019. That's, like, a year and a half out. And then you get to, like, winter 2020. And we're like, hey, game's not quite ready. We got to delay it until fall of 2021. Okay, that's fine. But if you announce your game in 2013 and say it's going to come out in 2016, and then 2016 comes around and you delay it perpetually until it finally arrives, dropped off at the fire station by some unloving parent, you know, in 2019, six years later, that's a little extreme.
That is a little extreme.
You know, not that a lot of developers have room to talk, because I mean, that's a lot of games. But, you know. Ugh.
No, I agree.
Speaking of things that got announced well before they actually came out. The last story of the day. This is just here because of the fucking price. I'm not going to lie.
You put that here because of the price?
Just because of the price. Oh, so, NVIDIA announced at CES back in January the RTX 3090 Ti. Sorry, TI.
TI. I was about to say, what the fuck is a TI?
So that is what the guy at the in the NVIDIA conference said.
He said TI?
He said the GeForce RTX 3090 TI. It is TI. It has always been TI. The CEO says TI. It's TI. Apparently they've said TI in the past. And I've gone back and watched some old videos, and they did actually call these things TI cards, but TI, whatever. They announced that it would be coming soon. Well, soon has finally arrived. and NVIDIA has launched the GeForce RTX 3090 Ti for $2,000.
Oh, my. Could you imagine a scalped price on that? Jeez.
Yeah. It is the fastest GPU on the planet, presumably. I think based on data that has come in, the card is 30% more expensive than the RTX 3090, will consume a significant amount, more power, about 30% more power, and, will give you a wonderful, roughly 10% more performance.
Are you serious? All that for a 10% more performance? That is some satisfactory type of shit right there.
It's like 11 or 12%. I'm rounding down.
2% really helps.
This is not really a card meant for gamers. Basically, this is a card meant for creatives that also game, which the 3090 was also that card. I don't know why this GPU exists.
This is a card to put the man on the moon.
We put the man on a fucking moon with the computing power of a watch.
Right then. Like I've said.
The Apple watch on my wrist is more powerful than the computers that we use to put people on the moon.
Then maybe we should use that 3090 Ti to put somebody on fucking Pluto.
So, the card uses 450 watts of power, requiring an 850 watt power supply minimum.
Sheesh.
It has also dropped its 12-pin connector and will now be using a 16-pin power connector. And most power supplies don't have native cables for this, so NVIDIA is supplying a dongle with 3 8-pin connectors on it. To plug into the card. Most add-in cards will probably be slightly overclocked, assuming you can even overclock this thing. And those will draw even more power. So realistically, $2,000 GPU, you can use it as a space heater.
Oh.
You know, in the cold winter months, you can just like mine crypto or fucking, you know, play Star Citizen or something that's going to make it spin up real hot, and then just stand over it so you don't freeze to death.
And heat yourself up. Maybe you can cook some bacon or bologna on it or something.
Exactly. And you can turn off your fucking actual central heating, which is would be more expensive to run.
Yeah.
So you can save a little money.
Save a little money off of a $2,000. No, I mean, understandable.
You can buy a $2,000 GPU so you can save a little money on heating.
No, let's be reasonable here. That's a really good idea.
It, you know what? It is. It's a very good idea.
Yes.
Don't invest in NFTs. Get yourself a 3090 Ti and use it as a base heater in the winter months.
3090 Ti.
Yeah. So NVIDIA launched this card, and in related news, there's been some rumors about the Ada Lovelace cards, which should be coming out later this year or early next year. Those are the 4000 series cards. There's a lot of speculation on those about potentially the reason that the 3090 Ti exists is that these Lovelace cards may not be able to hit those upper echelons. They may be more mid-tier cards due to, you know, pandemic production issues. But additionally, the Trump tariffs have expired. So GPUs from foreign companies should begin to come down in price by as much as 25%.
Sheesh.
So Asus announced that the MSRPs on their cards should be coming down by up to 25% now that those tariffs have expired. So GPU prices have been coming down. They should continue to come down.
Let's go.
And we may be getting into a time frame. I noticed a couple people on Twitter the other day were able to walk into a store and buy a Xbox Series X and without having to refresh pages or do anything online crazy. GPU prices are coming down. Movies are making money again. Things might be, knock on wood, returning to some semblance of normal.
Let's go.
Finally, 2 years into this fucking nightmare, things may finally be going back to normal. And you know what? State of Games kind of says that.
Yes. Well, everything's going back to normal except for fucking State of Decay being delayed.
Yes, your game being delayed is a real
heartbreaker.
Show. I'm sorry.
I'm gonna cry a little bit after this podcast. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
I'm going to shed a tear or two.
Well, before you shed tears, let's get to some listener questions, shall we?
Ooh.
So I say that in the plural. We have one, but it's actually a pretty good one.
Okay.
So this is from a listener, Cade in Louisiana. Hi, Cade. Okay. Hi.
Hello.
So he asks, what is your favorite type of game? And name a few games in that genre and tell me why they're your favorite. Like, mine would be survival, like The Last of Us and Green Hell. I like The Last of Us because it hits home for me, and it's thrilling. Green Hell is my favorite, too, because it lets me use my Boy Scout experience to play the game. Hardest I've played. All right, so I didn't realize there was a game where you could use your Boy Scout experience to be good at it. Tie them knots, man. Tie them knots.
Tie them knots, tie boy. Them. Tie them.
Get... You know, you'll get your knot tying badge. You'll get your. I'm sorry, I don't mean to shit on Boy Scouts. I'm sorry, but you know what? Boy Scouts don't have cookies.
No, they don't. Girl Scouts do.
That instantly disqualifies them from being remotely interesting. Like if I have a son, he's going to be a fucking Girl Scout.
The cookies
for the cookies.
I get those cookies.
I'm be like, listen, it's 2020, whatever. Possibly 2030, whatever. You're a Girl Scout because Daddy wants some cookies. But Dad, I'm a boy. I don't care.
Don't care.
Doesn't matter.
You need those cookies.
Gender is a societal construct. You are a girl today because I want cookies.
You can go tie knots next year.
Yes, you can go tie knots next year once I have all these cookies. But then I need you to go back into the Girl Scouts when they expire.
Yes.
Or they're gone, whichever comes first.
Yes. They'll probably be gone.
They'll be gone. I will
never be a Boy Scout.
I'll never
be a real Boy Scout.
The Pinocchio of children. Except if Pinocchio was just always wanting to be a Boy Scout instead of a real boy. What was the question again? What was our favorite type of game?
Favorite type of game.
Okay. Well, Chase, I shall let you go first on this one.
Oh, no. Be my guest. You can go first.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
So my favorite type of game is probably going to be a good old-fashioned role-playing game. I really like RPGs. I have gushed about this game on this podcast multiple times, Divinity Original Sin 2.
Yes.
It is probably not only my favorite RPG, it is probably single-handedly the best video game I have ever played. It is thrilling. The combat is engaging. The exploration, the game doesn't hold your hand. It doesn't give you, I think they've added some of this stuff in post when I played it. But when I played it, there were no quest markers. There was no, you know, it was all very much you read your quest log and you had to figure out where to go. You had to figure out what to do. And the characterizations and the narrative and the actual role playing, you know, the entire time I was playing that game, I was legitimately like imagining myself as that character, which every RPG you play, there's an element of that, but not to this level where like I was that character and I was imparting some of myself into that character. And then later on in the story, you know, you have a companion with you the entire time, even in a multiplayer game, you have a companion. And you're playing through the game and you're developing this relationship with your companion. You're developing this relationship with your character. And then the game just threw me a narrative curveball. And I was just like, you know, I don't know what to do with this because I never imagined the relationship between these two characters being that way. And the game was like, you didn't think about it, but now you're going to think about it and you're going to make a decision on the spot about it. Like you have to like, and so you were never like super comfortable with, you knew exactly what was going to happen next. Like the game was really good about throwing those curveballs. And, you know, I put like 80 hours into a single playthrough of that game. And, you know, I love Skyrim. You know, Skyrim's always everybody's go-to answer for an RPG. But Divinity is a tour de force from beginning to end. It's just absolutely fantastic. And I like the freedom that RPGs give you when they give you that freedom to just play the character you want to play. Even when it's not like super in depth and it's just like you're picking a class and you're building out a skill tree and a gear set, like Diablo, for example. You know, Diablo I wouldn't say is super in-depth narratively or choice-based. Like it's not like a super deep RPG in that respect, but the loot system and the gear grind and building out your specific character to your specific specifications is still super engaging and super enjoyable. So for me, like that is when I sit down and want to play a game, that is like, those are the games that I have the most fun with and I fuck with the most.
Understandable.
Yeah.
I like it. To be honest, after Tiny Tina Wonderland kind of dies down, I was planning on playing some Divinity 2.
It's so
maybe
good.
Getting a friend or two. Yeah, I've actually never run through it before.
Oh my God, it is so good.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. I've convinced myself.
And I don't know if anybody's done anything with it, but it has a tabletop mode.
Ooh.
Where you can like build your own like
ooh.
Kinds of stuff. It's got Steam Workshop support, so I imagine some people have done some stuff with it.
Oh yeah.
So I'll definitely have to take a look at that. Because that could it could be a really, and that's the other thing about that game and a lot of RPGs in general, like Skyrim is a great example of this. They can be great foundations for other people to build ideas on top of.
Yeah.
And so Divinity Original Sin 2 gives you that directly with the tabletop mode, the Dungeon Master mode, or whatever it's called. And then, you know, Skyrim with its modding and, you know, total conversions and all these things. Like, there's just so much potential there that is unlocked not only by you playing the game, but by other people just tinkering with it and doing really crazy and unique things. So, yeah, I could go on and on and on about RPGs because I fucking love them. So I'll stop so you can talk about your favorite games.
oh, So sweet of you. Thank you. Thank you. No.
No, actually, see,
mine's a mix. Like, I'm like 50-50. Okay. Right? I really can't decide. So I'm a humongous sports fan. So obviously sports games always have my heart. I've literally been playing every single Madden since Madden 06. Uh-huh. It was like a tradition every year for my birthday. I would get the next Madden. So, and Madden normally comes out in like August. So my birthday is October. I would be 2 months late, but I would always get it every single year. So sports games always have my heart. Nobody will ever take that away from me. The other side of it is kind of like the simulation aspect. Like, I like going into a game. Like, for example, let's take State of Decay. The reason I love it so much is there's so many different traits, so many different personalities you can put on a character. They always look different. You can customize them. It's like the randomness in the simulation that I just love.
Yeah.
That's why when I do 2K leagues, after so many years, real life players retire and you get left with these random generated players. And I love when that comes in because it feels like a different game to me.
Yeah.
I love the simulation aspect and like the Madden franchises and stuff. If you remember way back a few years ago, you actually bought me RimWorld. Mm-hmm. And I've tried that game, but that game is so fucking complicated. But that is like the ultimate simulation game. Mm-hmm. And I just love those genres. I wish I could find some more.
Yeah. But
I don't like Grass Mowing Simulator. Fuck that. But
what? But this,
yeah, yeah.
One mowing simulator? Oh, come on.
But
for the year, man.
I love the
it's right up there with Ark 2.
Oh yeah, Ark 2 and Ark 1, both garbage ass games. By the way, no, we can't get into that today. We got to pass up on that. We talk about it every single podcast.
We do.
We do. We do. But no, I actually got to find some more games that touch on that little simulation itch.
Yeah.
That RimWorld and leagues and sports does for me. Shit, that's why I'm waiting on the college football games and the college basketball games. Now that they have the license to do it. Ooh. I will be, that is the one game I will pre-order from that year. Guaranteed.
Damn.
Yes.
I won't go ahead. I won't pre-order an RPG. Well, let me rephrase that. I did pre-order Tiny Tina's. But that's because I saw it and was like, hey, this is it.
I didn't realize you pre-ordered it.
I did. I pre-ordered it. I shouldn't have, because I don't normally. But I had seen a lot pre-release and was like, okay, I think I'm gonna like this game, so I'm gonna go ahead and buy it.
Awesome. Awesome.
But I don't normally pre-order. And I advise people not to. Don't,
yeah,
don't
I normally don't either.
Don't be like me. Or be like me and just be like, don't pre-order it. Secretly pre-order some stuff.
No, I haven't pre-ordered in a while. But, I mean, getting a little off topic, The Quarry is a game I probably will pre-order. Mm-hmm. Just because I've been waiting to play Until Dawn because, you know, don't got a PlayStation.
Yeah. Sons of the Forest, you might pre-order that one.
Closest I can get to it is...
Speaking of another game that got delayed...
That game that got delayed?
Yeah, I know for a fact that I sent this to you in a text message. That it got delayed to October.
Oh, yeah. All right. Sorry. I was like, what? No. Yeah. I got you.
Yeah, it was supposed to come out this month, and then it got delayed.
Yeah, I saw that. Because right when I saw it, I was like, I'm just going to leave it on my wish list. And I put it at the bottom because I was like, it won't be coming out for a little bit.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was tweaking for a second.
Oh, you're good. I will say Last of Us, fantastic fucking game. Like, so good.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't like The Last of Us?
Definitely up there for me. I like third-person action games and action survival games and stuff like that. I mean, I like all types of games. I'm not the kind of person that's like, I just like one type of game. Like, those people don't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
Like,
Call of Duty Apex players.
Like, just, I wouldn't even go that far. Like, I would say that the people that only play, like, FIFA or only play Call of Duty, like, they play just one game. Like, those people make no sense. And then you have the people that are like, oh, well, I just play first-person shooters or I just play sports games. And it's like... Well, at least you're playing a couple different ones, and it's not all the same.
No, they're kind of the same, let's be honest.
But You know, I mean, they are, but
I won't defend that.
But I'm big on like simulation games that are like more strategy focused. So like real time strategy games to begin with, games like Civ. Like, there's elements of simulation there, but, like, mainly, I'm talking, like, thinking of, like, city builders.
Oh, yeah.
I really love a good city builder. Like, I can sit back. I used to sit back and play SimCity for just...
City Skylines.
See, I love City Skylines, but it does not click with me the same way that SimCity did. Like, I don't know what it is about City Skylines where, like, I'll play that game for a little while and I'll build up my little battery city to, like, pump my coffers up, and then I'll just be like, all right, now I'm going to build my actual city and I want it to look good. And then I'm just so hyper-focused on it looking good that I end up dropping it. And I'm just like, I can't make the city look good. So then I'll spend like 20 minutes or more like 2 hours looking at the workshop, trying to download mods and assets and things to make the city look nice. And by the time I'm just like, I'm done. It's the same problem I ran into with fucking Planet Coaster. I love that game. That game is gorgeous, and you can build some really beautiful amusement parks. And I love Roller Coaster Tycoon growing up. I played the shit out of all three of them. And I would spend hours and hours and hours a day building these just enormous theme parks. And with Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 for a long time, I really got into like the custom scenery stuff, and I was like building these really beautiful, like actually highly designed and creative parks. And then Planet Coaster came out, and it's like, you have so much fucking freedom. And I'm just like, I can't make anything look good. Like, it looks good from one angle, and then as soon as you get off angle from that, it's like it looks horrible.
Yeah.
And you know, but I like the simulation aspects, so I'm really big into like right now Parkitect. That game is really good.
Ooh, Parkitect? I've never heard of it.
Because it's like old school Roller Coaster Tycoon, but it has a little bit more simulation focus. Like you have to like have staff. It's not just having staff, but you have to like maintain your staff. So you have to make sure they have their needs met, and you have like staff pathing. And if the guests see any of that backstage stuff, then their opinion of the park goes down. So you have to like cleverly hide it. So it's pretty
that's cool.
So I really like games like that. And then like I think me and Ariel had this discussion. Civ, like I love Civ.
I mean, who doesn't?
I can play that game by myself.
if someone has given Civ a shot, then come on, dude.
Well, I could see if somebody's not related to it.
No, you got to give it a shot at least.
Yeah, you got to give it a shot. But I feel like there's definitely a lot of people where that game is too much.
Oh yeah.
Like it's just too much complexity, too many systems. Like especially Civ 6. Like if you jump in now with all the expansions, like there's so much shit you gotta get under. Like you have to understand religion. You have to understand not only like base expansion, like base Civ expansion and city expansion and you know like production and growth and all these things, but you also have to understand religion and climate and like all this other thing. Like it really shoves it all in your face.
Back to the older ones.
Yeah.
Civ Revolution.
Yes, the dumbed down iOS console civilization.
Yes.
Civ Revolution. Yes. That shit show. That's not a Civ game. That is a phony knockoff of a Civ game.
A phony knockoff?
I know it's made by the same people, but
you are sleeping on Civ.
I love
or at least that version of
I'm
Civ.
I'm sleeping on Civ Revolutions because I'm sorry, but it is trash.
It is. You are tweaking.
I mean,
it's like a child Civ game.
I have Civ 6 on the Switch, so clearly it was never a problem of the games being too complicated. It was just a matter of thinking that the games were too complicated for console players, so they made it simpler. It's like just give them Civ. Just like give them Civ. Just because they play on console doesn't mean they're stupid. Like, give them Civ. Just let them play real Civ.
Yeah, like actual Civ.
Please. And now they do.
Yes, they do.
So we've come so far.
We have.
We've come so far, and now it is time to go.
It is. It is.
Another week in the can.
It is another week. Week's been flying by.
Another week in the can. This is episode 15.
15?
15.
No, what episode? How many have I been with you, though?
7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. This is episode 9.
Well, that's 9 good episodes, then.
9 good episodes. I don't know why I had to count that. I could just have done simple math, but whatever. I counted on my fingers like a 5-year-old.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9 episodes. Yay!
Yay!
Oh, man. So, more Tiny Tina's, obviously, for me.
Yes, same. I'll probably max everything out.
Try to go and play a little bit more Tunic. Maybe play a little more Forbidden West this week. I'm trying to take a break from that game. Not because I don't like it. Don't get me wrong. But game is really big.
So yeah.
I kind of want to take a break before I put another, 10, 15 hours in. But this happened the last time when the first Horizon came out. The same thing happened. I played it for like 10, 15 hours. I hit a point where I was like, yeah, nope, this game's big. I'm going to, play the shit out of this. And then another game came out and I was like, ooh, shiny.
Ooh, shiny.
And I went and played that.
Much better.
And I played that for weeks, and then I ended up pushing Horizon off for months, and I was like, God damn. That's just my problem.
Yes. If Divinity 2 is on sale this week, I will maybe move to that. But the next time I see it on sale is the next time I will start playing it.
Let me know, because yes. I will play it with you, because it is such a good game.
Yes, I'm actually pretty excited.
Yeah, no, I think it. Oh, SimFest. SimFest. I might have to take a look at that after the podcast. Ooh. While I'm downloading the audio to edit.
hopefully, Divinity 2 is there.
See if there's a little bit of
simulation. You know,
I don't think it's going to be in the SimFest. I think it's.
The RBG.
If it was in the Sin Fest, then maybe. Because there's a hell of a lot of sinners in that game. Sin Fest, maybe.
Permanently be $17.
Yeah. So that
everybody can experience it.
Yes, it just needs to come to Game Pass, is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
It needs to come to Game Pass.
I wouldn't mind that.
Well, with that, we're going to wrap it up, and like E3 2022, we're out.
Canceling. No, I'm kidding.
It was nice knowing everybody. It was nice doing this, but yes, like E3, we're out.
We'll be back next year, maybe.
Comments a couple episodes ago, they just caught up with me. And,
yeah.
But yeah, so like E3, we're out. Have a good week, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.